Hi, my name is Cinnamon Cooper, and my favorite thing is throwing Halloween parties.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the official start of year two, season two of Finding Favorites. I am really excited to be heading into the second year of this podcast. I don't think I expected when I started that I would, one, that we would be in the COVID shutdown for so long, and two, that I would have it in me to look at year two and say, yeah, I'm ready to record some more. It is Father's Day in the US, so happy Father's Day to the dads out there, the stepdads, the uncles, the people who are father figures. And also recognizing that Father's Day can be a difficult day for others. I am preparing to drive cross country to meet my dad in New York to collect some of his sculptures that have been in storage for a few years. So next week I will be driving cross country, stopping in Michigan to go to a memorial for our dear friend Lucy, who passed away during COVID from breast cancer, and then continuing on to New York, where my dad and I will have pastrami, we'll have some steaks, we will maybe go to the Guggenheim, and we will fill a car with sculptures, and I will drive back to the Midwest. So I'm looking forward to that. This last week, you can find me, I was a guest on the podcast Hungry Cat Daily, which is a podcast about Garfield. I'll link to that in the show notes. And next week, I will be a podcast on my friend Maria, who you remember from the Cheery Little Bottom episode. She started a new podcast called Jewish-ish, a weekly Parsha chat show. And so I will be on for the episode about Parsha Pinchas. So I was recording that this morning, which is why this is coming to you a little bit late. I dug into the archives a bit. You'll hear a clip from Brandy Agerbeck's episode on Harold Ahmad, a special clip from Jackie Chang, all about this Halloween party. I know that I've talked about it on other podcast episodes, but because I don't do transcripts, which I must start doing in year two, I can't easily search for mentions of the Halloween party. So even though I know that, like, other people have been to that party and we've talked about it, I couldn't find the clips quickly enough. So I just have two clips from two wonderful folks in my life. This week's episode is with Cinnamon Cooper. She is a cookbook author, a purveyor of handmade purses and bags, and she is also the co-host of a party I look forward to every year, the Huff and Cooper Halloween party. And she's here to give us lots of tips and tricks about hosting dinner parties, big parties, costume parties, and thinking about re-entry and building our in-person communities again. So I hope that you continue to stay safe, that you are able to reconnect with your loved ones. Have a good week. Enjoy your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. It is year two. Season two starts today. And I am so pleased to have with me today Cinnamon Cooper. Cinnamon is the owner, purveyor, stitcher, designer of Poise, which are at her handbag company, and she is the author of the Cast Iron Cookbook, and really a girl about town, a girl about the internet. Anyone in Chicago who uses the internet knows Cinnamon. Cinnamon, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully on this Juneteenth holiday.
Yes, it's Juneteenth. It is, as of yesterday, a federal holiday. 2 days ago, a federal holiday.
Yeah, yeah. 16 hours ago, a federal holiday. Hopefully, yeah. It is just the first start in recognizing all of our African American and Black citizens mm-hmm. and giving them the rights and freedoms that they deserve.
Yes.
And should have had for hundreds of years.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is. Hope. I agree. Hopefully it's.
Hopefully it is the first step.
The first step towards greater equity and reparations. So yeah, we are coming to you live from a very hot Juneteenth observed in Chicago.
Yes.
How is your summer kicking off?
This summer has felt very paused and also very explosive at the same time, mm-hmm. I think. It's the first one sort of post-pandemic, and we're not necessarily out of the pandemic if you look at the worldwide map, but Chicago yeah. feels like we are on the verge. I think we are at now like 70% of citizens have had a first shot, which yeah. is fantastic.
It's tremendous.
And makes me feel very, very hopeful and very appreciative. A year ago, I was not in the headspace that I am in this year. And I'm looking forward to spending time with friends mm-hmm. and visiting people and having them into my home. And
yes.
Yes, hugs. I want so many hugs.
All of the hugs. Yeah, I have started, we have a ton of mutual friends, which we'll really get into during the big topic of today's conversation. So Jasmine was in my like COVID pod of like people. It was kind of some of my other single child-free girlfriends were the people that I spent the most time with, but we weren't necessarily even always comfortable spending time indoors unmasked, but
right.
we became like errand buddies. I got a car. So Jasmine and I would go to Target and then to like a drive-through and have a picnic in my car all winter. With like all the windows open so we could eat. So yeah, I look forward to eat meals with friends in more temperature controlled ways. I was just saying to someone last night, you know, there's that whole level of friend, of acquaintanceship, friendship that I maintain through, there are people that come to your Halloween party, that come to my Hanukkah party, and then I'll see them at like one summer event. And that, like, maintains the relationship. And then on the internet in between.
Yeah.
And I miss those people.
I do, too. Yeah. I'm lucky that we had a small pod. We live in a two-flat, so the family who lives below us, we got to spend a lot of time with, mm-hmm. which was great. And I'm immensely grateful that we had those people.
Yeah.
And that because we were potted so closely together, we were fully comfortable enjoying meals together. Mm-hmm. But I'm ready to see some people who aren't them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are such an incredible host, which is one of the big things we're going to talk about. But I mentioned your cookbook, which I have given many times when I find out people don't have a cast iron skillet. They're not expensive.
No, they're not.
They can be expensive, but they don't need to be expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
And I will often send people a skillet and your cookbook, or if they've got a skill and they don't know what they're doing, I'll send them your cookbook. But one of my really like favorite memories is when you were writing that cookbook and you were doing parties to mm-hmm. test recipes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I came to one and it was in the backyard and you did an okra, like a grilled okra.
Yep.
I don't remember anything else you cooked that night, but that okra is like the best okra I've ever had in my whole life. And I think about it a lot. I've never tried to replicate it because I feel like okra intimidates me, but I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I could go deep into okra because I love it so much.
Yeah.
But I think okra is definitely an underrated vegetable, mm-hmm. and I live near Devon Avenue in Chicago, which is a very popular Indian and Pakistani and Southeast Asian strip, and so okra is available to me pretty much year-round for very little money, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. So, and since I love it, it's great.
Yeah.
But the okra dish that you had is essentially just rubbed in a spicy bearberry paste and then I put it onto skewers and then stuck it on the grill. Mm-hmm. I've also just roasted it, like, you know, put the rub on the okra, tossed it into a skillet with a little bit of oil and fried it. So it smokes up the house a bit, but it's so delicious. I don't usually care.
Yeah. I think of okra as being like a southern vegetable. I didn't know it was also like a East Asian vegetable?
Well, it's also from Africa.
Okay.
Which was how we have it in the United States, of course. But also it's very popular in Indian dishes.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll pay more attention.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the right climate for it. You need a lot of moisture.
Okay.
And you need a lot of heat.
Yeah.
And a fairly long growing season. We tried growing okra here, and it happened to be a fantastically hot Chicago summer, but we got like 4 pods before it got too cold and the plant died. So if we had had just a bit of a longer summer, we probably would have had some okra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as things start to nudge open, what are some of your like near-term plans?
I feel guilty for saying that I want to get out of Chicago because Chicago in the summer is why I live here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go see my family for the 4th of July weekend, and they're just in Columbus, Ohio. So it's a short drive, but I'm going to hug all of my nieces and nephews and my mom.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm looking forward to. And then a few weeks later, we're going to take a trip to Key West.
Ooh.
Where it's even hotter and more humid than it is here in Chicago.
Yes, but there are those cats with 6 toes.
Not pterodactyl.
It's like, it looks like pterodactyl.
Yeah, petadactyl. It's 5-toed cats. Hemingway's cats.
Yes. Yeah.
They're supposedly descendants of Hemingway's cats.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's fun. Is it just like pure vacation somewhere new, or have you been before?
I've been before for a wedding at about the same time of year, so I know exactly what I'm getting myself into. This trip is for my faux goddaughter's graduation present,
okay.
I suppose.
Yeah.
We had said, hey, graduate, get good grades, and we'll take you on vacation for graduation. So she's bringing a friend with her, so that way she's not the bored 17-year-old wondering why she's hanging out with the olds.
Yeah.
So I imagine there's going to be a lot of time them running away from us, but we'll also buy dinner. So they'll come see us for that at least, I'm sure. But yeah, it's going to be fun to just get away. And we ended up getting some flights that fly directly into Key West. So that
From Chicago?
From Chicago. Yeah. Yeah. We originally planned on flying into Fort Lauderdale, but car rental costs are so expensive.
They're so high.
That it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Next weekend, I'm driving to New York by way of Grand Rapids, which is not the easiest, you know, detour. It adds a few hours to the trip because my dad has had sculptures in a storage unit since his show in New York in like 2017.
Wow. Okay.
You know, and like life happens and all of a sudden it's been 5 years.
Yeah.
And so we're going to go back to get the Wabbits. And so he's going to fly and I'm going to drive. And I was like, the last time we went, I rented an SUV. So the sculptures all like every sculpture had a seat and a seatbelt. And I went looking and it was like $2,000 for a week long rental, not including gas. And I wrote my sister and I was like, do you think they'll all fit in the Altima?
Yeah.
Like, do you think it? She was like, yeah, I think you can, you know, you take one small bag, you know, like everything Leah goes in the front and then all the sculptures go in the trunk and the back seats. And so I'm just going to see what I can do. But the car rental prices are bananas.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
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 But I'm looking forward to. You know, I'm going to figure out some audiobooks. I haven't really had the attention. I haven't had reading any. I've not been able to read a word during this pandemic.
I get it. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to, instead of just listening to podcasts the whole way out, to like figure out like what's an audiobook I'm really have been wanting to listen to and maybe just do an audiobook.
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something fun and light, so you're not, maybe get your brain back in the gear of hearing other words.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Like a narrative.
Yeah.
Get used to being able to hear a story and not just, I just listen to podcasts to make it feel like I have company over.
Yep.
And that's all I do with my brain.
been a rough one. I think we've all learned a lot more about how our brains work in the last year than we ever expected to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do I have an ADHD consult coming up? Yes, I do.
The number of people I have read or heard about who have gotten ADHD consults, like, or trying to get them,
yeah,
has ballooned in the last year.
Yeah. And
I totally understand why.
The pandemic took away all of the, I'm grateful for it, but all of the hustle and adrenaline that kept me moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And without the, it supplied a different type of adrenaline. So I'm not going to say there's no adrenaline living through a pandemic, but without the need to be going from here to here to here on a daily basis, without all the movement my life used to have,
yeah,
I have found that my brain is just like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then ADHD TikTok has been very convincing.
Yeah. So many other people I know have been like, yeah, I was looking at this kid with ADHD on TikTok and being like, I understand 100% of what this kid is talking about.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm looking forward. That's one of my summer plans, is that I really hope that diagnosis comes through and I can try doing some interventions and see if I can work better with my brain going forward.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, just finding out what you have to do to set yourself up to get done the things that you want to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish you luck.
Thank you.
And if anybody else is struggling with ADHD, check out TikTok. Maybe you'll find yourself there.
Yeah. So before we get into the main topic, I did see recently on Instagram that you sent like 40 bags to Australia.
Yes, I did.
Was that like for a specific shop or a conference or?
Yeah, there's a company there that is based in Botany, New South Wales.
Okay.
And the name of it is Single O. They are a coffee roasting company.
Okay.
And they have a handful of different coffee roasting sort of collections and kits that they sell.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking for a bag that they could put one of their, like, their big major mega kit into that they could sell as, like, here's your bag with everything you need. It's got your coffee press and a spoon. And I don't drink coffee, so I don't know all of the stuff. But they found me on Etsy and said, hey, I think this bag is the perfect size. Can you verify that the internal dimensions are at least X by X?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes, absolutely. That's exactly the size. And they're like, great. Will you make us 30 bags and ship them to Australia for us?
Wow.
And I was like, sure. So they are my, I think they are my main, if not my sole wholesale client this year.
Yeah.
But a couple times a year, I make 30 or 40 bags, ship them to them, and they put together a little kit, which you can buy for quite a lot of American money if you try to get it shipped to the United States. Because I was like, huh, maybe I'll send this to somebody. And then I was like, oh, with the shipping, no, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah.
Although I suspect you might be able to sweet talk them into, you know.
I'm sure that I could talk them into a discount. Yeah. 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 So the bag that I'm making essentially looks like a paper lunch sack that's a little bit larger. And it's made from wax canvas. It is food safe because the wax is vegetable based, which means it's also vegan. And it is also, just eco-friendly. It's earth-friendly. Yeah. And it's made in the United States, which is also sort of part of my shtick is to try and support American suppliers of products for my bags wherever I can.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah.
So have you been sewing for them for a while?
I think we are up to 4 years, 5 years now.
Oh, that's outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. They've just randomly found me. And then every once in a while, I'm like, okay, I'm setting aside everything else I'm doing for the next week and cranking out a lot of bags for these people. Yeah. But I also have a shop on Etsy, where I have messenger bags and these lunch bags and some dop kits. Not everything, but almost everything is made out of wax canvas.
Mm-hmm.
with the focus being American-made materials, eco-friendly, sweatshop-free.
Yeah. Well, Cinnamon, I was going to say, I didn't just bring you here to catch up, but the whole point of the podcast is I get to talk to people I love uninterrupted for at least an hour. So I did invite you here just to catch up.
Yes.
But the specifically what we're talking about today is hosting parties.
Yes.
Of which you are I was just at a talk with Renee Rosen talking about her new book called Social Graces and about the Gilded Age and society in New York and the women who were the hostesses and the hosts and what it like what where it put you in society to know how to throw a good party. And you know how to throw a great party.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Which people have, if things go well tomorrow, which was yesterday when you're listening to this, you're now going to hear a bunch of clips of people talking about Cinnamon and her husband Andrew's Halloween party. Clips, 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 clips. We are in the same Halloween party circle, so totally. We definitely see each other every year. She is always in an outstanding costume, and I am always in a costume that got me in the door. Brandy, how are you today?
I'm great. And I have to say, I wish I had more chances in my life to make and wear costumes, but that's my single, you know, my Super Bowl of the year is making my Halloween costume.
Yeah. I love going to that party just to be an observer of great costumes.
So my favorite memory of a Huff and Cooper Halloween party was actually maybe one of the first ones that I went to. I don't know if it was the very first one, but it was one of the first ones. And it, you know, I think the theme was something related to famous people. You know, I'm not doing a great job of remembering all the details here, but I just remember it was something related to famous people. And I was really into sewing at the time, just in general. I was sewing a lot of my own clothes, some clothes for other people. And so because of that theme and me being into sewing, and also me kind of going through like a newfound Bjork phase, I had always loved Bjork, you know, in the 90s, and then she's always been cool. So anyway, I decided to be Bjork for this Halloween party. So I had worked on a replica of the Bjork swan costume for weeks, if not months. You know, I did everything very fastidiously and carefully. It was not a janky costume at all. I mean, maybe, you know, by professional standards, it probably was, but you know, for like an amateur, it was a very nice costume and I worked on it for a very long time. There was a lot of tulle and some fake feathers, the whole deal. I wore a bodysuit underneath, so there was no boob poppage or anything like that. And so I wore this costume to the Huff and Cooper party. I had worked on it for so long. I was just so proud of it. And I showed up and there was another person there who was also wearing her own homemade Bjork swan costume. And it was just so shocking to me and my partner, Clint, that this could be possible, knowing how long I had worked on it. But, you know, instead of getting angry, I actually just thought it was hilarious. And I still think it's hilarious. You know, however many years later it is now, like 10 years later, 12 years later, I just think it's the craziest coincidence. And we found each other immediately, of course. And we had a laugh about it and took a selfie together. There were other people at this party who were dressed amazingly. I remember Jasmine was dressed up as Kim Jong-un, or maybe even Kim Jong-il. That was before Kim Jong-un came around. That's why I remember it was about famous people. It was just kind of a weird, crazy party for me. Again, it was really just because I was shocked the whole time about this swan costume thing. But also, you know, I think I really got to know some of the other people who are now some of my really close friends at that party, partially just because of such a strange coincidence happening then. And I also remember after that party, I had gone out with some other friends up in Boys Town wearing the same costume. And so I'm sure you can imagine what it's like to show up in Boys Town dressed up as Swan Bjork. on a Halloween, hot Halloween night when everyone's clubbing. So that was just that was just a crazy experience for me. I remember it so well. I remember it like it was yesterday. I could be reliving it in my brain at this moment. And so that's my favorite memory from the Huff and Cooper Halloween parties.
When you just think about hosting parties at like a broad top level or hosting, what does it mean to you?
That is a great question. I think it's more about what it does for me than what it means to me. Feeding people at its core, whether that's a cocktail or whether that's some roasted okra, makes me happy. Like, that's my love language. Like, being able to make people physically feel better for the brief amount of time that they are shoving delicious items into their face is my way of being able to express my love at its core. And I think in order for people to truly enjoy food or drink, they have to be comfortable and relaxed. It's allergy season here in Chicago.
So were those little kitty sneezes?
Those were kitty sneezes.
No.
Yes. Completely forgot my train of thought.
Your love language is food.
My love language is food. And making people relaxed and comfortable is the facilitator to get them to enjoy the food and therefore appreciate my love for them. And I think I threw some bad parties before it got easy.
Okay.
And then once it became easy, then I don't think I've thrown a bad party since then.
Yeah.
Which is, now that I think about it, pretty impressive because it's been, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 years since I've not thrown a bad party, which is great.
Yeah. How did you know they were bad parties?
They were bad parties because people... I think it was a struggle to get people to talk to each other, because I think one of the goals of parties is saying, hey, I know these great people and I know those great people, but maybe they don't know each other, but I would like them to. So you get them in the same room together. You get them relaxed. You feed them. You give them something to drink. And then hopefully they also become friends. And that's the ultimate goal, I think. I'd like all of my friends to be friends with each other. I'm not selfish with my friends. I don't have a problem with my friends meeting each other and then going off and becoming better friends together. I think that's great. In fact, but I think ultimately I think part of it is that people get stressed out about entertaining. And I think so many people think, oh, well, if you're going to be a hostess, you have to be like the Gilded Age women of New York high society and everything has to be pristine and perfect. And in my experience, that doesn't matter at all. If somebody is inviting you into your home and you are feeding them and they don't have to do anything except sit there and enjoy it, that's truly all they care about. And maybe it's because our friend group is more casual, or maybe it's because we are in the era that we're in, but it could easily be Stouffer's lasagna that you've baked in your oven. And then maybe put a little extra Parmesan cheese on top. They're not going to care because they didn't have to go out and buy the Stouffer's lasagna. They don't have to do the dishes. They just bring a bottle of wine maybe and sit down, and it's more about enjoying time together. So I think if anything, I would love to encourage people to just go out and find out what it is that they're worried about, what they're nervous about, mitigate that, and then just entertain. And it doesn't have to be you throwing a fancy dinner party for 15 people. It could be two people. And you could be just doing takeout.
I do think that one of the lessons of this last year is that, I mean, I talk about this, I feel like every other podcast at least, I spent a lot of this pandemic in a dugout across the street, in a baseball field dugout, and we would get takeout and just go sit in a baseball dugout and eat. But I think people got really comfortable with the idea that it doesn't have to be a home-cooked meal, you know, and it doesn't, and you can all get, you know, Jasmine and I will often order in, like, Chinese or, like, ordering in food for friends does not equal pizza. Like, it doesn't have to be a pizza night every time. And, yeah, like, ordering food and then just sitting in the backyard and eating it is a totally lovely thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's more, I think it's you saying you are important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore I'm going to take away all of the work of socializing.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is sit and talk to me.
Yeah.
And talk to the other people who are present. Mm-hmm. And enjoy yourself. And that is the only expectation of a guest.
Yeah. But do you have a more of a sweet spot? Like, are you more comfortable with a 10-person party versus a 75-person party? Like, do you have a sweet spot, ideal hosting size?
That's a good question. Our table fits 10 people very closely.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are having more of a sit-down dinner type of thing, 10. So yeah. 8 guests is usually our max.
Yeah.
Before the pandemic, we had started hosting some casual cocktail parties where I'd make a couple of appetizers and then mm-hmm. we would have a couple of cocktails available and people would hang out. And I had plans to do so many of those in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So soon we'll start ramping those up again. But 10 to 12 for that seemed like a really good number.
Yeah.
And I think it depends on your space. We're lucky that we live in a standard Chicago 2-flat, which has a gigantic dining room.
Huge. Yeah.
Because when all of the German and Liechtensteinian families who built our house in our neighborhood, the dining room was like the center of mm-hmm. where the family spent all of their time. So it had to be big.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, it works for us.
Yeah.
I know many friends who live in one bedrooms or studios where having 4 people over means that their house is full.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, I think it's just a matter of finding out how many people are comfortable in your space and making that your cap.
Yeah.
And then if you're uneasy about entertaining, then only having to make 4 people happy is a lot less stressful than trying to figure out how to make 12 people happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I have my friend Ahuva said to me once, she was like on Shabbat, she was like, the apartment will take a deep breath. She was like, there's always room.
Yeah.
She was like, there's always room. And I've, when it comes to like Jewish holidays, have taken that to heart. And I think some of my friends would be like, okay, Leah, like literally your apartment can't hold any, it's really uncomfortably full.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the more toddlers that get added to the mix, the more that changes, like.
Yes. Yes.
Toddlers need more space. They need a runway, literally. They got to get their zoomies out. And families need like alternative seating options. And but I do think being real about what your space can hold is absolutely an important part of hosting.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I've done over the winters is made a couple gallons of soup and just mm-hmm. invited people to show up. When I first started doing it, I literally didn't have enough bowls. So it would become a bring your own bowl party.
Yeah.
Where I would say, okay, I'm making soup. I don't have enough bowls. Bring your own bowl.
Mm-hmm.
It's dead of winter. We'll warm it up before you have to put your food in it.
Yeah.
But it would be 20 people or so. And not everybody was sitting and eating at the same time, which was great. But then also people were just like, hey, I'm just going to pull this pillow off the couch and sit on the floor. Is that okay? I'm
like,
whatever you want.
Yep.
You know, I'm grateful that we've got a big enough space that people could find little corners and mm-hmm. groups of 4 or 6 people just sort of clustered together and ate soup. And I tried to talk to everyone. And I think part of entertaining is figuring out how to spend time with everybody who comes.
Mm-hmm.
This is not possible at Halloween, which makes me sad every year.
Yeah.
But also, you know, for a dinner party, it's a little bit different to make sure that you talk to everybody who comes to a smaller party.
Yeah.
I think if that's my main tip, and it took me a while to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm naturally an introvert, which surprises me why I enjoy throwing parties, because normally, you know, being around groups of people can exhaust me.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're in my home and I'm feeding them and I'm making them happy, I get energized by it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm not as much of an introvert as I thought I was at one point.
Oh, I would much rather host the party than attend the party.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At Hanukkah, people are always trying to get me like to stop frying the latkes.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, but if I'm at the stove frying the latkes, everyone knows where to find me and I will see everyone through the course of the night and I will feed everyone.
Yeah.
If I go to my living room, I know I'm just going to sit down and stop moving. And mm-hmm. being at my stove cooking for that particular party is how I circulate.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I think it's hard for people to see that. But like eventually everyone comes through the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like at your Halloween party, you know, you guys are in and out of the kitchen making tater tots. So like if somebody really wants to catch you, they can just wait by the oven and you'll be by at some point.
It's usually every 22 minutes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let's just dive in. Let's talk about the Halloween. We've been previewing it. I've been talking about it on this podcast for a solid year. Is your Halloween party, which is epic. So when did it start? Like, how did you guys decide? What was the first one? And then when did it become a tradition?
The very first one was probably in 2000. Mm-hmm. And it was a couple of apartments ago. And it was awful. I'd say it was awful. We were much younger. Mm-hmm. It was the first big party that I felt like I had thrown. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily know what I was doing. So, and because I like making kind of fancy food, I had made a lot of fancy appetizers. Like I took cherry tomatoes and cored them out and piped basil cream cheese into them. And then like positioned little basil leaves so they look like a cherry leaf. Like I went above and beyond. And almost none of the food was eaten except for the potato chips and the chips and salsa and the quick snack foods. And so I learned that at Halloween, people don't want fancy food. They want something quick and easy and comfortable.
Yes.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
So I since have not done that at Halloween. I think the other thing that made it not the best party was that we had a few friends who were... who brought guests who were in their very, very early 20s, Mm-mm. who probably were very much into the fact that we had an open bar. And so they decided to drink everything that they possibly could.
Yeah.
And there was some cleanup that was unfortunate.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. But also we had all the lights on and almost nobody came in a Halloween costume. And so it just felt like a very awkward just post-college party.
Right. So the couple, a few people in costumes, fancy food that nobody's eating, some super drunk strangers.
Yep. Glitter everywhere. Glitter everywhere. Somebody came in an absolutely fantastic poison costume. Mm-hmm. And she was covered from head to toe in green glitter.
Yeah.
And I think I'm still... Like,
it's I'm sure
been 21 years, and I feel like I'm still finding bits of green glitter in my belongings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glitter is insidious.
It is. It's truly. It's the only craft supply my sister banned me from sending the boys.
Understandably. So that one was a bit of a bomb. And then we moved into a much smaller apartment and took a couple of years off.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we moved into the place where we are now, and we had just finished completely redoing our kitchen.
Yeah.
And all of our friends, sort of our main friend group, had different holidays that they had chosen. And we're like, mm-hmm. well, I guess Halloween's left. Okay. And I was like, okay, I've learned things from my last party. Mm-hmm. So now it is going to be quick, easy, child-friendly, childhood mm-hmm. comfort food. So tater tots made their initial presentation and have stuck around since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, we have a cheese plate, there's salami, like we do a little, you know, maybe it's slightly fancy, you know, now I can afford good brie. Whereas then I was like, what's on sale at Jewel?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's like an elevated, but it's still not, it's an elevate. Basics is now such a like dirty word, but it's elevated basic snacks.
Yes. Yes.
Like it's a pre-sliced cheese plate, you know, you're not getting a saran wrapped,
right?
You're not getting the Jewel five vegetable ranch dip thing.
Yeah.
But it's that done cinnamon style.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my goal is to make sure that there's enough food. So if people have a little too much to drink, mm-hmm. they can have something more to eat, but not have so much food that people feel obligated to eat more than they would probably want to.
Yeah.
You know, or especially so that way I'm not throwing a lot of food away at the end of the night.
Right. And when did you realize giving people a costume theme was going to be welcome and really like, that is truly what levels, there's so many things that level this party up. But the theme, you guys release the theme sometimes a solid year in advance.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah.
Usually minimum 3 months in advance.
Try to, yes. Yeah.
And it is... I'm terrible at costumes, but I love them. When did the theme start?
The theme started from talking to friends, and we're like, hey, we're thinking about doing a Halloween party. Are you free? And they're like, oh, yeah, but I hate coming up with costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, huh, interesting. And then Andrew, my husband and partner in Halloween crime, said, well, how about if we throw a Halloween party with a theme and tell people that costumes are required. So yeah. That way we don't end up with three people who went way above and beyond.
Yeah.
And 75% of the people are not wearing a costume at all.
Yeah.
So the very first Halloween party we threw, we actually bought like cheap masks at the Halloween store and told people who came who didn't have a costume that they would have to wear the mask for the rest of the night.
Nice.
And we didn't actually make them wear it, but you know, that was in the invitation.
It sent a message.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And we said that your costume doesn't have to be good, but it has to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's done amazing things for our very smart and very creative friends who many times are like, I'm not that creative. Yeah. I don't know anyone who's not creative. And I know a lot of people. It's given the ability to just sort of focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like one of our costume or one of our Halloweens right after we got married was doomed couples. So, so we went as Persephone and Hades.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's our party. So we're the gods of the underworld.
Yeah.
Obviously. But it was amazing just how like that small bit of a theme created amazing sort of couple costumes. And some of them were inappropriate in the way that we had a friend who came dressed as a priest with a small little child doll because he was a solo person.
Yep.
So we couldn't come as a couple. But we had another couple who came and their entire costume was he put on a pair of reindeer antlers.
Mm-hmm.
And then she took two lights that you touch and they activate and wore them over her chest. And so they were deer in headlights.
Oh, no. So
we have people who go way above and beyond.
Yes.
But then also people who literally spend 5 minutes putting their costume together.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And I remember it for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The time I did the least work and came in a costume was Halloween, I think, was the theme.
Yes.
And I
yes, took Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. And I took the silver medal gymnast meme and I printed it out and it was like, saw my costume, is not impressed. And I just like safety pinned it to my chest and I'm like, this is what I got. She thinks I'm boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The mashup year in particular sticks in my head because somebody came as the Jiffy Pope.
Yes. Yes. Our friend Pat came as Jiffy Pope, complete with popcorn in his scepter.
Yes. And Ramson Cannon came as the Card Sharks Got Smarter, and he was a shark. It was a mashup of two movies about sharks. No, one about card sharks and one about sharks.
Yes.
And I just... when I see sharks in my head, I hear him saying, the card sharks got smarter. And it's this, it just is like so locked in my brain.
Yeah.
What are some of your, when you think about themes and outstanding costumes, also you and Andrew also, You guys do phenomenal costumes every year.
Not true.
No?
No. Andrew is great at costumes.
Yeah.
And so he goes above and beyond. My costumes all never come out the way I intend to.
Okay.
Partly because I never spend the right amount of time actually developing my costume. And I also just, and maybe I'm justifying it, but I decided if my costume is present but not amazing, if I'm the worst costume in the room, then everybody feels a little bit better about the costume that they wore. So it's part of it is that the costume is not the fun part for me. The people showing up and making sure that they have fun is where I invest my time and energy. And so then I just have less time for the costume.
Totally get it.
Our last party, we revived the Happy Halloween. Was that it, or is it Mashup? I think it was Mashup that we did last time.
Mashup.
Yeah, we brought back the Mashup because so many people had asked for it.
Yeah,
and so I came as Mary, Queen of Ska.
Yes.
So I made a fantastic collar and, did a little jig. It was probably the most amount of time that I've put into a costume. I probably put more time into that costume than I have in all of the other costumes I've created and put together. Yeah.
Last summer, because you live on a street, it's Chicago, streets go very far.
Yes.
And I was walking near my apartment and I crossed your street and I looked at it and I was just like, there's not going to be a Halloween party this year. And it was this, I feel like it was early in the summer of COVID and it was just this, it was such a, I started to realize all of the things we were going to continue to miss.
Yeah.
And it was, and that's when I really started to realize that there are relationships I maintain through seeing people at your house once a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how important it is to like a lot of this extended group of people that are just like, well, they're the people I see at the Halloween party. And that's why we're friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I have two thoughts. One is it was probably about last June where we realized that we were not going to throw a Halloween party. And we spent 3 months talking about what our announcement would be that we were not having a Halloween party.
Yeah.
And decided it was so depressing that we just never even sent a message out to people canceling it. Because it just, like, every time I sat down to write it, I would become so depressed about the fact that I could not see all of those people. And it was just emotionally too hard. So I ran away from it. Avoidance. Why not?
It was clear to everyone that there was not going to be a party.
Yeah. And I also figured if anybody messaged me a couple of weeks before the party and was like, hey, when are you throwing your party? I'd be like, yeah, you're off the list. If you want to hang out in a room full of people during this time, maybe I don't need you in my life.
Yes.
Nobody did that. Nobody did that.
Yeah.
Oh, relationships at Halloween. Yeah. I take great pleasure in talking to somebody in, say, January and them saying, oh, yeah, so I met somebody at your Halloween party and I don't remember their name, but they were dressed like Snow White.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that would be my friend so-and-so. And they're like, she's fantastic. How can I get a hold of her?
Yes.
And being able to make those connections after the Halloween party gives me so much continued joy. It's the party that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
And so it's been great last year while everybody was home and alone. And I was listening to your podcast and there were so many names that popped up that I was like, oh, I know this person. I haven't talked to them since that Halloween party. This is great.
Yes.
And then they'd mention the Halloween party, but it was great to just sort of hear what they were into, whether it was watching West Wing or whatever it was. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So it was your gift to me, even though it wasn't about me at all.
It was. It was secretly all about you, Sinead. But it was about, like, I enjoy podcasts that make it feel like I'm hanging out near friends.
Yes. Yeah.
And it has been really fun to interview so many of my, like, Chicago internet friends and have a longer conversation that wasn't, you know, people I care for and love dearly, but that we almost always see each other in a busy situation.
Yeah.
And, but because of Twitter or blogs or, you know, the little sprinkles of communication we have, we maintain a friendship. We have a certain level of closeness. So for me, it's been a real gift to have longer conversations with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a blast. As the world reopens and people try to remember how to host, how to have people over, how to cook more than, you know, one dish for the week, or what are things that you're thinking about as you think about reopening your house to people, starting to have people over again? What are the things you're thinking about, like, to prepare yourself to host again?
That's a great question. I think I have so many ideas, and it's all about dishes that I want to make for other people. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of figuring out who the right people are for those dishes. You know, I think one of the things that I just have a natural filing cabinet in my brain for is everybody's food aversions or mm-hmm. allergies or sensitivities. So that way I'm not going to invite all of my friends who are gluten-free over for pasta, for example.
Yep.
But, you know, or my friends who are Muslim, they're not coming over to eat pork.
Right.
You know, I'll invite other people to the pork barbecue.
Yes.
So I think I'm fortunate in the fact that every Friday and Saturday night during the pandemic, I would either cook food or figure out, for the most part, it would be me figuring out what to order for dinner for, mm-hmm. you know, our entire house for five people. So I've had some experience with a small amount of entertaining.
Yeah.
So it's not like my skills completely atrophied.
Yeah.
But they got rusty. I think, like everybody, I'm a little bit concerned that I'll remember how to converse with people. Mm-hmm. Like, what do we talk about? Because nothing's happened for the last year to us personally. And everything else that has happened in the world is not exactly fun cocktail party conversation. Mm-hmm.
It's like we need to go to a finishing school, like a renovation school, a restoration school.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Bring back topics, conversation starters, right? Things that aren't just how, you know, what flavor of depression did you have during the pandemic, right?
Right. Yeah. And I definitely want to hear that if my friends want to talk about it.
Right.
But also, I think I'd like to talk about more than what TV they've watched recently. Mm-hmm. And I feel like all of the Zoom conversations and the in-person conversations, we can always tell, like, when we've run out of new topics, because it's been like, oh, hey, so there's this new show called Loki.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
TV has just become our touch point. It's how we've figured out what we have in common with each mm-hmm. other in the last year. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I would like more from life than watching other lives that are made up on mm-hmm. television. So I think part of it is also me just trying to come up with, and this is not something I've ever done intentionally before, but come up with a list of questions about what I want to ask the people that I haven't gotten to have good in-depth conversations mm-hmm. with for the last year. Like, what do I want to know about them as people? Either what's happened in the last year or what they think about something, or so just spending some time ahead of time and coming up with a list of ideas about what to talk about. So that way we don't get into the, so last episode of Loki was great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was great, but
And Jocelyn came a few weeks ago with a box of questions.
Oh, that's great.
And like was pulling cards. And one that she asked us that got us going for a solid hour was, now it is TV related, mm-hmm. but if you could live within one TV show or movie for a week, what TV show or movie would you live in?
Oh, Well, that's good.
Which was like a really interesting, you know, do you go somewhere so that you can have a luxurious vacation?
Mm-hmm.
Do you go to a early season of The West Wing so you can meet those people? Is it like, do you go to a show with a lot of magic so you can be magical for a week?
Oh, mm-hmm.
You go to an animated show. So it's like, what do you value? Like, if you could take a true, it's kind of a vacation into a new world that you've been watching, but like, what is the thing that you want to be able to do? So that's an interest. It's a good segue from talking about TV to like a different type of conversation.
Yeah.
It's not politics. It's not religion. It's just like,
yeah.
Or just anything that you just, anything you do that you think is like so obvious and everybody must do it the same way can get, you know, do you get your toothbrush wet before or after you put on the toothpaste?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, there are people who do that differently than you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I definitely think that one of my personal failings is that I assume that everybody is like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost 50. I'll be 50 this year, but I've just begun to realize just how different I am in small ways
mm-hmm.
from so many people.
Yeah.
And if I had realized this at 20, I think so much of my like young person anxiety just would have evaporated.
Right.
Like so many people I was convinced hated me and then realized, no, they're shy. Just like I am.
Right.
Oh, that's a complete that blew my mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it is nice getting older and learning more about ourselves and how mm-hmm. the world works and making room for that like forgiveness. If you're going to host a small dinner, what are things that people should think about or what's advice you have for people now?
I would suggest introducing people who don't know each other or who mm-hmm. don't know each other well.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something about getting to know people
mm-hmm.
that opens up opportunities for conversation and can make conversation easier once you get over the initial awkward introduction part.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like my main tip. Like get your people that you like together, because if you like them, there's a pretty good chance they're going to like something about each other as well. I think also figuring out what the max is that you can do comfortably. I think a lot of people feel like they either have to go like full Martha Stewart.
Right.
And I don't think unless you're Martha Stewart or unless you have professionals helping you, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's appreciated because if it's too fancy, people are going to be just slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So keep it casual, but also in whatever way you need to do to make it feel special.
Yeah.
So if you're like, okay, I want to have people over, but cooking for 10 people is just way too much.
Yeah.
Fine. You know, order some trays of food, but then put it into serving bowls. Don't serve it in the to-go containers. Just having it be a little more personal is all that it needs to be. And when people compliment the food, say, oh, well, great. Here's the restaurant.
Yes.
Don't try and take credit for making something you didn't make. But also, if you do make food and it doesn't come out exactly like you want it to,
mm-hmm.
and this is something I learned from Julia Child, don't criticize the food. Don't say, yeah, but it's too salty or yeah, but I overcooked it. Just say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not criticizing your ability to cook. They're thanking you for them not having to cook.
Yes.
And I think those are the main couple of tips. I think in general, I think so many people stress out about entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love it if people would just realize that the first time you do it, it may bomb.
Yeah.
But the second time you do it, you're going to learn things.
Yeah.
It's going to be easier. And then the third time you do it, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. So if you're uncomfortable about it, invite people who love you anyway, mm-hmm. and they won't care.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have really gotten over the need to have I mean, I never had a perfect tablescape, but I'm like, it's, we always end up moving the flowers to, so people can see each other or to make room for food.
Or somebody's allergic.
Someone's allergic. So like flowers are nice, but not necessary, you know, a hydrangea and a rose and a martini glass or like a little mason jar, low profile, no smell. That's all you need.
Yep.
And I also like my Passover Seder is one where we do the storytelling part of it just sitting around the living room. And then I'm like, okay, there are the folding tables. Some of us are going to go to the kitchen and finish and prep the food now that it's time for dinner, reheat some things. And the rest of you are in charge of setting up this room for us to eat. And I'm like, there are the tables, there are the tablecloths, and I'm not going to micromanage you. Don't ask me any questions. Just make decisions.
Yeah.
And I've gotten much more comfortable with trusting my friends to make a comfortable space. I know that I like to have a role and that some people feel safer, like they feel better if they're doing something. Some people really want to, they're asking that to chop thing. A vegetable so that they have some, like they don't have to make small talk.
Yes.
And so I'm much more comfortable now, like saying, like not trying to get every bowl on the table in advance, because people are going to want to help with that. And that is also a-okay. People can have jobs and you're not a caterer, you're a host. And they're your friends. They're not strangers. They're not customers.
Yeah. So let somebody else put ice in the ice bucket and put it on the table. Let somebody else put plates on the table. It's fine. Yes, I completely agree. Yeah. If you make it a part of a shared experience, then it's a shared experience.
Yeah. I would say the purchase that I am happiest about in the years that I've been having people over for holiday dinners is I bought steam trays from Party City.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, got steam trays, got those little blue flame things, and keeping the hot food hot all night has been like that. That was my big level up, was, you know, and it's I'm not going to say it's a cheap thing to do, but it made a difference in how I, you know, keeping the food out of the danger zone.
Yes. Yeah. So that way you don't worry about giving your guests food poisoning.
Yeah.
Because they were the last person to eat the mostaccioli instead of the first person.
Yes. Yeah.
I completely. Yeah.
I also, my sister also got me a crock pot with three little crocks in it.
Yes. Yeah. I love that.
I love it. Like a hot dip station.
Yeah.
The best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, it just makes it, you don't have to think about it. It's just going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do like pulled chicken in one and then two vegetarian dips. And then if people want them to be meat dips, they just add the pulled chicken to their plate. Yep.
I think other small entertaining tips is I'm a list maker.
Mm-hmm.
And so for days before our Halloween party or before I throw any big party, I will literally just write down a list of all of the things that run through my head in the order in which they come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then a day or so before the party, I will organize them. And some of it are, you know, ideas about like, don't forget to put out silverware or, you know, buy napkins. But then I group them. And just crossing things off the list provides me immense satisfaction.
Yes.
And also gives me an idea about how prepared I am.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I am awful about is getting everything done before the party starts.
Yeah.
So I'm always finishing things up as the first guests are arriving. And that used to stress me out and make me feel like I was a bad entertainer or bad person, bad host because of that. But then I realized that nobody cared because it was all things that I could do while I was still talking to people.
Right.
And I think I'm fortunate in the fact that I am part of a couple. So while I can be finishing up the kitchen stuff, Andrew can be the one greeting everybody at the door
and
offering them a drink or taking their coat.
Right.
And I don't have to do that part.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, being able to share tasks equally between us is immensely helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just designate people. I'm like, all right, your doorbell now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
your napkins, your doorbell, like people just get a job. Right. Cause I am just one person, and I've gotten more comfortable with that too, of like, yes, I'm the host, but like we're a community, and unless it's a, you know, a baby shower or something I'm truly hosting and the people coming are not my people, they're my friends' people, then I do try to have it a little bit more together.
That's a little different. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Cinnamon, this has been a blast.
Thank you, Leah.
What this a good way fun. To start our Juneteenth off.
Yes, I agree. And hopefully somebody is inspired by this and decides that they are going to invite people into their home or their backyard or the dugout across the street from them. And hug your peoples.
Yeah. Where can people find you online? Do you want people to find you online?
Find me. Yeah. It's my name is Cinnamon Cooper. There are two Cinnamon Coopers that I know about. The other one lives in Indiana and is a student loan collector. So I get some hate mail on Facebook. That's fine. I just don't read the that folder anymore. It's fine. But I'm pretty easy to find. Cinnachick, CinnaChick is where I am on Instagram and TikTok and Twitter. You can just type that into your search bar and I'll pop up. If people are interested in the cookbook, they could go to Amazon or their local, order it from their local bookstore. It is called the Everything Cast Iron Cookbook. I think it's now selling for about $10 online. Cast iron skillet is less than $20 at your local hardware store. So it's a great little gift. Thank you for that. Poise.cc is my website.
There's also, if anybody was inspired by you talking about soup, you also are responsible for how I make tomato soup.
Oh.
So if people go on the archives of Gaper's Block.
Oh, yeah.
Cinnamon wrote this tomato soup recipe that, like, you roast the tomatoes first and then you add it. Like, it's a whole thing, but you roast, like, tomatoes with garlic cloves first and then it all goes in the soup pot and you simmer it and then you blend it up and then you can add cream or not add cream. Sometimes when I roast the tomatoes, I toss in a couple jalapenos for the roast to give it a little kick. But I will also find this tomato soup recipe because it is one of, if not the best internet recipe I've ever had, like certainly one of the best and one of the ones that I've gone to most often.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that soup recipe. It is not tomato soup weather, but
no,
today it is so gross. But tomatoes are coming, and I imagine it also freezes well, although I never have enough left to freeze.
It would freeze well. Yeah.
So later in the summer, when your tomatoes come in, batch cook some of this tomato soup, freeze it up, and then you'll have comfort food this winter.
Yes. January, you will be grateful to September, you, for the work you do.
Yes. So Cinnamon, this has been wonderful. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you, Leah. Enjoy your weekend. I look forward to hearing the rest of your guests this season.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.